In her book, Silver, Sword, and Stone, Marie Arana explores how 1,000 years of history continues to live on in the lives of the people of Latin America today, and how understanding these three basic elements, silver, sword, and stone, can help to overcome the cultural divide between North and South America. Marie is the literary director of the Library of Congress, and she joins us from her home in Washington, D.C. Marie, thanks so much for being with us.
Rick, thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
First of all, Marie, what is Latin America?
Latin America is virtually everything south of the Rio Grande. So you have Central America, and you have Mexico, which is North America, actually. You have Central America. You have the continent of South America. You have the Caribbean islands that are Latin American islands, Cuba and Dominican Republic. So it's a pretty big space.
So there's the United States and Canada, and then everything else in this hemisphere would be, geographically speaking, Latin America.
Exactly, Rick.
Now that's geographical, but what I love about your book is this sense of a cultural divide as well. And who could better explain this to a North American like me than somebody like you, whose father is Peruvian and whose mother is American?
Yes, being born of a Peruvian father and an American mother, and having grown up for the first 10 years of my life in Peru, and then, you know, catapulting to this country and trying to understand what that division in myself was, I've been trying to explain to Peruvians who Americans are for years, for my whole lifetime, and now in book form, trying to explain who Latin Americans are.
I was fascinated in your book how you had the challenge of explaining to your parents the cultural difference they had. And by, you know, crystallizing that, you can also explain to the rest of us the difference between Latin America and our culture here in the United States. Talk about how that worked for you, the challenge of helping your father, the Peruvian, better really psychoanalyze or understand your mother, the American.
Well, that is sort of my life story, Rick, and it's a wonderful question because, you know, growing up, my father would throw up his hands and he would say, "Would you please tell your mother what I mean here? And what is she talking? Why doesn't she understand? Why doesn't she know X, Y, and Z? Like how to eat, how to pray, how to raise your children, how to walk through a house. You know, you never leave your house barefoot or without your shoes on." My mother used to love to leave house, go into the garden without your shoes on. And my mother would have the same reaction. It was like, "Would you please explain to me what your father is thinking here? I don't understand it." And they adored each other. They loved each other more than life itself. But they didn't understand each other because the cultural differences were just that huge.
Wow. So if you can just, in a very simple layman's terms, of course, it's a generalization if you simplify, but what is the cultural difference, the in my mind versus in the mind of a Latin American? What's the fundamental difference?
Well, Americans are much more forthright. They also look to the future in a way that Latin Americans look to the past. And Latin Americans are far more conservative, reserved really about their life stories. They're more careful with the family feelings. Just the act of writing a memoir, when I wrote a memoir, I guess about 20 years ago now, first of all, there are no memoirs. There are no memoirs in the Latin American sense. The United States is flooded with memoirs. Memoirs is a huge genre. So you don't tell your family stories. You don't share that sort of personal stuff. And just that captures, in a way, the very big difference, I think, in the way Americans think, which is much more open. And you're always sort of pointed to the future. And Latin Americans are always saying, "Well, that's not the way my grandfather did it, or that's not the way my parents did it."
Okay. Now, I got to clarify one thing here, because I'm careful because I don't want to be ethnocentric, but is that fair? The United States is America and everything else is Latin America?
Yes. You know, my grandfather always used to say, "What is it with the people of the United States of America?" He was the first person I ever knew to refer to identity theft. And he said, basically, "I'm as just as American as anybody who calls themselves American in Chicago. But North Americans have robbed the name American."
Okay, but are you saying we're getting away with it? And for purposes of, you know, terminology, we can refer to people in the United States as Americans as opposed to people in Mexico who are Latin Americans?
Oh, yeah, you bet. You bet. And that's the way it is. That's just the way it is. He was harping against the wind.
Okay. Yeah. And within Latin America, we've got Spanish and we've got Portuguese cultures. What kind of a divide does that toss into the mix?
Yeah, it does have a divide. First of all, Portugal and Spain historically were rivals, you know, and there was a very big rivalry back at the point of the conquest in the late 1400s. And consider themselves very different in spirit and nature. And I think if you do travel to Portugal and if you do travel to Spain, you see that sense. It's a very different character in the people and in the land itself and in the cultures. So start with that and start with the fact that the history is different in the sense that when there was a revolution in the Spanish-speaking Latin America against Spain, it was bloody. It was horrible. The Wars of Independence were wretched. You know, they killed a lot of people. They absolutely leveled cities. In Brazil, that never happened. And that was because when the French invaded Portugal, the king and the queen and the whole entourage went off to Brazil. So the king and the queen were sitting in Brazil. And when the sort of winds of revolution came, the royalty of Portugal basically said, yeah, you can have your freedom. That's fine. Yeah. We're sitting here. You know, it's okay. A very, very different sense.
Marie Arana is our guest right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Her book, Silver, Sword, and Stone, is now out in paperback. It demonstrates patterns from 1,000 years of history that play out in the lives of Latin Americans today. Marie is the literary director of the Library of Congress and directs the National Book Festival. She occasionally hosts her own author interviews on C-SPAN. Now, in our culture, we're realizing there's an urban-rural divide. You look at voting patterns and so on, and that's kind of also rich and poor. Is there the same urban-rural dynamic going on in Latin America today?
Oh, you bet there is. You bet there is. In times of trouble, and Latin America has had a lot of trouble, a lot of civil war, revolutions, terrorist strikes, and all of that has produced a flood of people going into the urban areas and overpopulating in the urban areas and looking for protection from the governments in the urban areas. Mm-hmm. And so what you have is there's this disconnect. There's a kind of centralized life, and all the business of a country is very often focused in a few cities or maybe even one.
You know, Marie, I was just in Guatemala, and it really struck me that the government really is governing for the people of Guatemala City.
Yes.
More than for the people of Guatemala. And that's where the big shots are. That's where the lawyers are, you know, the elites. And
you
the rest
bet.
Of the country is pretty much considered indigenous and a problem.
Well, you've got it, Rick. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And it's the case in Peru as well. I mean, you have a tremendous percentage of the population in Lima. And the world revolves around Lima so that the people in the rural areas really do feel ignored, neglected, underserved in so many ways.
This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're exploring different facets of the cultures of Latin America right now. Our guest is Marie Arana. She's the author of a book called Silver Sword and Stone. Marie, your book is Silver Sword and Stone, Three Crucibles in the Latin America Story. What does Silver Sword and Stone stand for?
Silver stands for mining, for the extractive society, for the 500 years of culture of taking things out of Latin America and sending them elsewhere. That's silver. You dig it out, you send it out. Sword is the very violent nature on which the entire region was built, not only by the conquest, by the Spanish conquest, but by what went before in the indigenous times. That sword. And stone is faith, the church, the belief systems. And I call it stone because literally when one civilization took over another or one conquistador came in and took over the indigenous, they would slap their stone on top of the stone of the places of worship. So they would build their cathedral on top of a temple, literally, literally. And that's stone on stone. So that's silver sword and stone.
I want to look at it in three levels. There's the pre-Columbian, pre-colonial Aztec and Inca civilizations and so on. And then there's the time of Spanish conquistadors and later on American imperialism. And then there is the legacies of all that in contemporary politics. How did that work in the pre-colonial world before the Europeans came, the Aztecs and the Incas?
In many ways, the silver, the sword, and the stone were all combined in one level of the hierarchy. I mean, the emperor of the Incas and the emperor of the Aztecs were both the military head, the head of the faith, in other words, a religious idol, a being to be worshipped, And they were also the wealth of the country. Mm. So they were, it was all focused in one in the indigenous world.
You know how they say religion is the opiate of the masses from a communist point of view? Or did the Incan rulers and the Aztec rulers, the power people, the people with all the silver and the swords, did they use religion to keep the common people compliant?
Indeed, they did. Indeed, they did. Because the one overweening mission and goal of an emperor, of the Inca emperor or the Aztec emperor, was to spread the word on the worship of the sun. So if there was another kind of worship that was in the process of conquest, the Inca and the Aztecs would insist on converting the conquered tribes into their religion. So yes.
Okay. Yeah. So then we got the conquistadors coming in, and we know about the Spanish that came in and just sort of basically turned Latin America into their quarry to just kind of take home all the riches. And it spills right into modern times, I think, with the American imperialism. And a lot of us have been to Latin America with the intent of learning about American colonialism. Let's skip the conquistadors for a minute and talk about the impact of the United States. From your studies, especially with your Peruvian heritage, how have American interests, the interest of the United States, played in to this silver, sword, and stone story that you're writing about in your book?
Well, the United States of America, from the moment of its foundation, was always interested in spreading its power into Latin America. Thomas Jefferson said as much. John Adams said as much. John Quincy Adams said as much. They felt that eventually Latin America would be theirs. And so that sort of mentality began very, very much in the founding of this country. But as time went on and Spain was ejected from Latin America and the republics were independent, from that very moment, starting in 1830 or so, the American sort of corporation forces, the business interests, began to go into Latin America with United Fruit, with the mining companies, with any number of corporate inroads into Latin America to sort of take advantage of the resources and the natural resources of Latin America.
Did you see religion working together with the sword and silver in this kind of economic imperialism?
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, if you're talking from the very beginning with the conquest, the conquistadors went in with their priests. And an interesting development, we find that in Latin America, there has been this tremendous move toward evangelism and evangelical faiths. And the reason why is because in a Catholic world, you suffer now and get your rewards in heaven, right? In the evangelical message, it's no, you can have your rewards now. And that has been so attractive to Latin Americans who have actually been, feel, many of them feel that they have been held down and allowed to be blessed as poor when the evangelical religions offer something else, something different, you know, riches now.
So I'm a little bit confused about that. Evangelicals, I thought, counseled people to not be political and not demand economic justice, whereas liberation theology types, and that would be the Catholic Church, wanted it to be more political economic justice.
Well, there's a difference in theory and in practice, because in practice, if you look at the big evangelical movements in Latin America now, they are huge churches that actually do promise that you will go from poverty to the middle class at the very least if you do as they say. And indeed, people have.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Marie Arana, and her latest book is about Latin America. It's called Silver, Sword, and Stone, Three Crucibles in the Latin American Story. Marie has also written a biography of Simón Bolívar, a memoir about her bicultural childhood called American Chica, and two novels set in her native Peru. You'll also see her byline on columns in the Washington Post and other publications. Her website is mariearana.net. Marie, today we've got all sorts of issues that are challenging societies across the hemisphere. We've got racism, we've got migration, we've got gangs and drugs, we've got corruption, we've got great economic inequality. When you look at Latin America today with all of these issues, how do you sort it out? Is it Are all of the countries in Latin America struggling with the same issues? How do these issues relate to silver, sword, and stone when we look at it right now, contemporary issues?
Thank you, Rick. The question is really important to me because what I have seen, if you go back in history and you really look with a critical eye, you see that there's a cycle, and there's a constant cycle in Latin America, and it comes right out of the history. You have the history of oppression and then rebellion, and this is these pendulum swings from oppression to rebellion, and the whole system is built to keep the lower classes and the poor down and the working class in its place. From the very moment that Spain left, the elites, the white elites, took over, and it was more of the same, in other words. So this cycle of repression and rebellion that goes on is something that Latin America has never been able to get over. And the reason it's not been able to get over it is because of the severe inequality and the lack of, frankly, of the very basic rule of law, which is so often corrupted in Latin America.
It's heartbreaking. You know, it's a big book, and it's a fascinating and complicated topic, and it is our hemisphere, and it's so fundamental to understanding our world these days. I wish we had more time to talk, but I would just like to finish our discussion with just my take on it is it just seems discouraging, and it seems like the problems are intractable. What is there any hopeful takeaway that you can give us from Silver, Sword, and Stone?
Yes, I think there is a hopeful takeaway. I think you see in the past, certainly in my lifetime, you've seen economic development that has been quite impressive. You've seen whole middle classes formed that were not there before. This is a very tenuous middle class because it always feels it can slide back into poverty very quickly. But the hope that I see is that more and more people are realizing the importance of these fundamental things that make for a strong civilization, a strong culture, and those things are the rule of law, education, and the eradication of corruption. Those three things are the most fundamental ways that Latin America can get on its feet. And I think, you know, you see glimmers of that. I see people pushing for that now in a way that, passionately pushing for that in a way that I haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. So I am full of hope.
I took that away from my recent visit to Guatemala, the importance of good governance and educating the populace and getting rid of corruption, complicated now, of course, by COVID and climate change. But there is reason to hope, and there is reason for those of us north of the Rio Grande to remember we're all in this together. If we want to be safe here in North America, we need to invest in stability and the success of Latin America. Marie Arana, thank you so much for joining us and your book, Silver, Sword, and Stone, Three Crucibles in the Latin American Story.
Thank you so much, Rick. It's such a pleasure talking to you.
We'll head back to the old world in a minute as we explore the lush scenery and cultural surprises of Galicia in the northwest corner of Spain. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves.